Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Food for Thought. On today's episode, we're going to learn about the fascinating world of large-scale insect farming for protein, not your everyday coffee talk in North America. Our guest today, Keith Driver, is the president and CEO of Intera Feed, a company at the forefront of this budding global industry. Intera's current focus is producing the highest quality insect ingredients for the animal feed and pet food markets, with hopes of becoming CFIA approved for human consumption in 2021. Keith is a serial social entrepreneur and a rare breed that holds numerous job titles at once, further showing his serial entrepreneurial nature and commitment to building businesses focused around sustainability. Keith, welcome to Food for Thought. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So maybe you can lay the groundwork for the viewers tuning in on the work that Intera is doing with insect farming on a large scale basis for the animal feed market.
Absolutely. So Intera, we're one of the world's largest insect farms, if not the largest. It started on a fly fishing trip about 10, 12 years ago. The idea of insects as a sustainable source of protein, and several rounds of investment later, we have a 200,000 square foot facility just outside of Calgary, where we produce insect grubs, whole grubs for the backyard chicken, wild bird feed market, and protein and oils for the pet food and aquaculture markets, and frass for organic fertilizer. So it was started off as a simple idea of two guys out fly fishing, turned into a business upcycling waste organics into high value proteins. Who would have thunk?
There you go. And so what kind of products and ingredients would the insects be replacing for the animal food industry? What would the animal feed normally be?
Sure. So in two of our markets, the backyard chickens and the whole wild bird, it's actually what the animal would be looking for in the wild. So for backyard chickens, we're replacing either a mealworm or a corn or some other sort of treat. And it's high in calcium, so you get better eggs. So it's a more natural, sustainable feed that provides for a better end product from the eggs. If it's in wild bird, we've done studies, and we get 50% more birds that stick around for 50% of the time. So there's that. When you get to the commercial pet foods, we're hypoallergenic. So we fit into that sort of niche market of sustainable, or for the 1 in 10 dogs that can't eat anything, that's where we fit. Those looking for sort of an alternative diet. Our competitors are things like kangaroo meat and bison and sort of specialty proteins that that are either difficult to source or expensive or otherwise.
Okay, interesting. So kind of paint a picture for someone of what large scale insect farming looks like, what kind of insects, and, you know, without giving away any of it, Intera's secret sauce, what is insect farming?
Sure. So it's an industrial process. So we are the largest livestock owner in the world that we know of. We have 3 to 4 billion head under management at any given time, and they just happen to be about 100 and some odd milligrams each. At their largest. So the facility is split into sort of four, well, not sort of, it's split into four areas. We make our own feed. So we take in organics and blend that into a feed. So we've got that feed production facility. We've got a breeding facility where we take flies, black soldier flies specifically, and incent them to breed and lay eggs that we recover. The black soldier fly female will lay between 600 and 800 eggs. So we take those and we grow them out for a number of weeks in a batch style process. 200,000 square feet is a lot of space. And when we process those down in another area into whole grubs, meals, oils, and the fertilizer components that come off that. So it's cranes and equipments and dryers and sorting equipment and all that to meet the CFIA food regs and our feed regs. And we're looking in the next year to move ahead with food regs. So all of those, the equipment you would think of in a modern processing facility, we just do it all under one roof.
One of the reasons we wanted to have you on was to, shine a light on what Antera is doing with food waste, as this has really come into light during COVID, the large amount of food waste because of food service demand effectively going to zero. But within the food industry, there's a lot of pretty staggering statistics of the amount of food waste, even when the market is at full capacity. And so maybe you can shine a light on what Antera is doing that's part of your operations that's actually having a drastic impact on reducing food waste for human consumption that normally would be going to a landfill or otherwise.
Yeah, so we're a pretty large scale producer or user of these organic feedstocks. So we spend a lot of time trying to ferret out supply of byproducts that wouldn't work for human food production and may have low value if they're fed in other livestock operations. And we can take that locally in Calgary. So that's a benefit. We see everything from pumpkins to in the last little week, it's been apples and peppers. And it's hard to see that stuff come through the door on the one hand, because, people are sort of nervous about the food supply chain, but there's so much product that just doesn't make it through. And we can take that product and we blend that with other products that are out there. So the veggies with the grains, with the otherwise, and we can make a consistent high value diet that seems to work really well for the larvae growth. And out of that, we then process back protein. So we were able to take the products that are being discarded or searching for a value and turn that into something else. So it's the silver lining in what might otherwise be a bit of a disappointing story, but around the leakage out of the supply chain.
Interesting. So what sort of scale are we looking at in terms of how much organic matter the insects are actually eating on a daily or weekly basis?
So we're about 180 to 200 tons wet of product every day, made up of some dry ingredients and some wet ingredients that get blended together. It's amazing to think these guys gain 1,000,000% of their body weight over 3 weeks. So the rate of gain on these guys is incredible, which means they're going through all of that product. And not all of that would have ended up in the landfill, so we can't make that claim. But a lot of that wouldn't have found a much higher value and wouldn't have been converted to protein as efficiently or wouldn't have been used in that same manner. So there's a real story there around how quickly these the black soldier fly larvae are able to convert that into fats and proteins that are of real value.
Mm-hmm. So how has Antera gone about building these partnerships with, food processing partners? Has that been an easy road because these companies would normally have to be, hauling that to landfills and otherwise, and you say, no, we'll take it all. And I think you even mentioned you have a nutritionist on staff. Sounds like...
Yeah, so a lot of these companies are looking for solutions. They've got folks on board that are trying to lower their waste footprint. It's a cost to the business, but it's also it doesn't fit with their sustainability approach generally. So we're finding receptive audience. A, we're cheaper. We're not a waste handling company, so we don't take a tip fee. We can't. The regulatory wise, that wouldn't work for us. So we're generally a good partner, and that allows us to work with folks in the supply chain, because those that would have either picked that material up and take it to a landfill can now take it somewhere where that material's got a higher value. They can pass that savings back to their customer. So we're working with third parties and some direct customers and partners that are providing feedstock on a regular basis, and some that are ad hoc. We don't want them to burn potato chips every day, but when they do, we want to be the first people they think of as a way to get rid of that product that can't otherwise get to the perfect grade that they want for their potato chip or their fry or whatever. We can take that product when it's slightly off color, off shape, off whatever, and find value for it.
Yeah, that's pretty staggering. If you extrapolate out, 200 tons a day, out through a year, and that's just you guys, that could really make a meaningful effect on reducing food waste. And it just shows you how much food is is wasted that normally would be destined for human consumption, whether it's blemished produce or it just simply doesn't meet standards. So can you touch on when most people think about insect proteins, oftentimes the only protein they've seen in a grocery store is like a cricket protein that might be part of an energy bar or whatnot. You guys have decided to go with black soldier fly. Why is that? And there's got to be, some interesting context around that.
Absolutely. So cricket protein is black soldier fly protein. They call it cricket flour. We call it our protein meal. They're very similar products. A lot of those cricket guys have been able to carve out quite a value for themselves, both in it as a novelty protein, but also for a functional ingredient in bars. And we're all for that. That's fantastic. There's lots of room for all sorts of different proteins, whether that be plant-based proteins or insect-based proteins. We need 70% more food to feed the world. There's lots of room on the table for folks. The cricket guys have predominantly gone food grade, and there's some reasons for that. The way they have to control their feed based on the insect allows them an easier path to food grade. We're coming that way though. We're working with CFIA to understand what would be required for our facility to get there in terms of controls on feedstocks and processes that would get us there. And we'll be there within the year ourselves. The reason to pick the black soldier fly larvae, say compared to crickets or mealworm, which is the third contender, is really growth cycle and time. So we believe that we have slightly different protein and fat profiles amongst the three species, and those are fine. There's values and functions for each of them. We believe the black soldier fly works really well across a number of markets that are of interest to us, and they're the fastest growing, quickest turnover of those. So we believe they take the smallest footprint to grow at commercial scale, and we look forward to finding out that either that's true or there's others that are equally competitive in this space. But they grow 1,000,000% of their body weight in 3 weeks. It's pretty hard to, if you can do that at scale, obviously when it's going from point something milligrams to 130 milligrams, 1,000,000% maybe gets skewed. But if you do 4 billion of those at any given moment in our facility, and you multiply that out, then it becomes a meaningful amount of protein that we can produce at that scale.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. So from a sustainability perspective and harvesting insect protein, are there any sort of statistics or comparisons you could provide, the average consumer out there that's, starting to maybe understand insect proteins versus, animal proteins versus plant-based proteins from a sustainability perspective, from a nutritional efficiency perspective, just on a high level?
For sure. So it's an interesting comparison to make. So I've seen a number of life cycle assessments on various different types of proteins, and everything from the plant based proteins, the soys and the peas, through to insects and cattle and chickens, and there's almost always a trade off in some form, whether it's GHGs. Greenhouse gas emissions versus feed efficiency versus water use. We know and believe that the environmental footprint of our product is quite positive compared to other forms of protein. If you think of peas, there's a whole, what about fertilizers and what about land use change and all these challenges that are there inherently, these difficult trade-offs as we look to produce more food on a finite planet of productive land. And then you compare that to insect proteins, and we have HVAC systems that use electricity, and we have cranes that need power, and we need to heat the building, and there's a few things we need to do that don't make us perfect either. But the footprint that we use, we take very good care to make sure that we're minimizing that footprint. And we look at that and say, well, we're actually keeping all those organics out of the landfill. And so on a balance of good, we believe we're good, but we also believe that just because we're good, we don't have to be, we don't have to say things about others and their practices to make ourselves feel better. We know we're good, and there's folks out there doing things in plant proteins and other animal proteins that are working towards the same end goal that we have, which is sustainable production of feed and food to feed the world. And for us, it's insects, and for others, you know, they've got other options that they're pursuing.
Mm-hmm. So right now, Intera is solely focused on the animal feed market. You said next year you're going to be looking to get CFIA certified for human consumption. Obviously, we're talking right now during COVID-19, and I don't know if that many people even knew necessarily what the term zoonotic meant maybe a month ago. Now a lot of people have a baseline understanding of that. How does that tie into the adoption of insect proteins for human consumption? Do you think, obviously consumers now are, because they have a little bit more time on their hands, a lot of folks, spending a little bit more time reading the labels of what's going into their food. So from a zoonotic perspective, is there risk from insects, or this is, I know that insect protein is commonplace in certain parts of the world, but not necessarily North America. So what are some of those hurdles that you see in terms of, flattening that adoption curve for human consumption?
Absolutely. And we believe we'll be a functional protein ingredient like any other. If you were to take our protein powder and put it beside any other protein powder, and I were to tell you, one's insects and one's the other, you probably wouldn't know the difference. And so we're not looking to replace a steak on a table. There's folks out there that are making ice creams and hamburgers and all sorts of other things from plant and insect proteins. And that's interesting, but that's going to be novel for a long time. What we're actually finding is our pet food consumers want to know that they're feeding a food grade product to their pet, primarily from a safety perspective, because the standard goes feed grade, then food grade. And so they would prefer to have that extra assurance that that product has been prepared and done in that way. So while we're moving towards food grade certification, that doesn't mean that we are going to shift our production all into food. There'll be some component of our products that end up in food. In fact, there's been a lot of work lately with the oil that we have as a butter replacement and in baking goods, and the meal in cookies and as a flour or gluten replacement, not replacement, but in lieu of the flour as part of the mix. And those will be very interesting, and we'll see where those take us. The largest one is just proving that we can produce that proteins from plants and food grade proteins from insects. Or they have different profiles, different impacts, different functions, and we're going to be part of that somehow as the market develops. And getting that certification will be key to satisfying the market that this is a clean product that's good for use, suitable for use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I as an experiment a couple months ago, I tried my first ever cricket bar, and if you didn't tell me that there was cricket protein powder in it, you wouldn't have known anything. It was quite good. So,
We eat them off the dryer every once in a while. And they taste like peanut butter Rice Krispies is how I describe it. They got the crunch of the Rice Krispie and they got a slight nutty taste to them. Once you separate out the meal and the oil, most of the flavor goes with the oil, and that oil has got a slight nutty. So if you can imagine in a cookie, like a peanut butter or a chocolate chip cookie, it just tastes a little bit nutty. What passes through and it's actually a nice flavor. And the meal has essentially not a lot of, doesn't have a dominant flavor. So we've had it in cookies and we've had people prepare it and all sorts of things. We've had people in the office make soap out of the oil as well, artisan soap. So there's 1,000 uses that we're going to find for these ingredients, these products. And, they, the day of this, you know, the scorpion inside a sucker that used to buy at the airport that I bought for my kids years ago, or the you know, the cricket bar as a novelty protein. It's just a protein bar. You know, that's what it is. And it's going to taste like whatever they want it to taste like by the time they put those ingredients together. And that's going to be important, more important than what the necessary ingredients were that went into it.
And so is the oil, is that also going to be, you know, a likely candidate for human consumption, not just the protein powder itself?
Yeah, absolutely. If you think about fish oil, which we're similar to in profile, we have a lower gel point and a few other different ratios of omega-3s and omega-6s, but they used to burn that for heat in the fish processing plants. And then they figured out the functional benefits of it. And now fish oil is a you know, a valued commodity in the human food chain. And we're not no different than that. There are certain properties of our product and components of the oil that make it particularly functional for certain uses. And the more we find out about those, and the more research that's being done on that, the better off we'll be, obviously as a company, as a provider of that product, but also as in a world that's going to be a finite set of resources.
Mm-hmm. So on an apples to apples comparison, if you had a scoop of soy protein powder, a scoop of whey protein powder, and a scoop of insect protein powder, are there any, you know, context or statistics you could provide just in terms of the nutritional profile? Are they, you know, essentially quite similar?
No, there'd be different profiles of different types of proteins. Ours would have, I'll give one example, and don't get me wrong. There's a spot for all those proteins on the shelf. There's a place where they're best. Where ours is better in aquaculture would be, there's certain carnivorous fish that just can't digest, unprocessed, plant proteins. So, you know, congratulations. We're better off in that category. We also have chitin in our product. It's the same thing that's in the exoskeleton of a shrimp. And so we have that protein in there. And if you're in a shrimp feed or a fish feed, a shrimp have to synthesize their own chitin when they molt. And if you've got chitin in the diet, then they can use that. So it's more available. It helps with the molting in fish farms, in shrimp farms. So there's functional benefits that are different, but most of these are selling on a highly technical, you know, basis where we're looking at all those proteins and someone's making a decision that says that's the best for this application. And for us in organic aquaculture in Canada, we're the best fit because we're suitable for carnivorous fish. We've got the chitin, it's got some value there, and we're recognized as a organic ingredient in aquaculture. So that's how we would carve out that niche. Whereas soy protein, you know, there's lots of uses for that we won't necessarily be of the best fit for, just because of price or function or form of that protein. So,
mm-hmm. Are there any insect proteins outside of cricket protein that you know are available on the market in North America, or is cricket kind of the only one that's currently certified?
There's some niche. I was at the entomology conference in St. Louis last year, and we had a bake off, and there was all sorts of stuff there. But a lot of them outside of crickets, black soldier flies, and mealworms, those are the three largest productions. There's all sorts of folks doing other stuff as novelty. And I think that's just an indicator of the interest in the space. And eventually someone will crack the code on parts of it, and we'll see other species grown commercially. But growing insects commercially is a long way from a hobby. It takes a lot of years and a lot of money to build a facility that can do that at the scale that you need. And so there's a number of those species that just won't make it because the ability to produce them just won't scale yet until someone, you know, cracks the code on the animal husbandry side or the efficient feeding side or just sometimes containing them in a space. So you see grasshoppers, you see scorpions, you see all sorts of things like that, but those are pretty novel.
Yeah. Obviously plant-based diets are, you know, sort of very on trend right now. There's the big rise, especially with, you know, sort of the rise of Beyond Meat, Impossible Foods, different companies like that. The consumers are traditionally, we're used to animal proteins. Are there any sort of brand or industry champions in the insect space, or do you think it's a matter of time and just building legitimacy? And once you do have a product for human grade, is it going to be small scale startups, do you think, that have the innovation, or do you think that, you know, the large CPG companies that have distribution, they have R&D, this is really going to catch their eye?
There's a number of great questions in there, and the plant protein guys have done a great job of defining the space they play in. So for a long time, we've had plant-based proteins for a long time. And they really found a way to build an industry around them, where when you think about plant-based proteins, you think about, you know, good products that are center of the plate type items. And for the longest time, that wasn't true of plant-based proteins. So they've done a great job at doing that. And the insect protein industry needs to get together. But frankly, there's six companies of our size in the world. And so, you know, there's a lot of other smaller companies on their way up, and we're just getting organized. So we're early days. We're still defining what the industry means and what we are. We've defined what makes good hygiene practices. We've defined what makes, we've got regulatory approvals with CFI and FDA, and we're working there, but we're 10 years behind the plant protein guys in terms of defining the industry and defining the value. Mm-hmm. We're likely to be smaller by niche. Our 200,000 square foot facility puts out 4,000 tons a year. So we're not going to compete with, you know, 50,000 acres of peas that can be grown, or lentils, or any of the other sources of product. We can't scale quite that quickly. But at the same time, we can go to places where we don't need more arable land. So every acre of peas planted is one less acre of wheat planted or something else. So for us, it's one more industrial building that's taken the waste. And there's always another industrial building that can be built. And that's a pretty, protein per square foot, we're doing pretty well. So it's new. There's lots of opportunity. We have a healthy R&D program to figure out with potential customers what that looks like. In the human food grade, you've got folks like Pepsi, who 2 years ago had an RFQ out for insect-based proteins. We've got lots of interest from sort of the specialty niche folks, the innovators that are coming up with products that are, you know, high protein or you know, keto friendly, or those types of opportunities where we'll fit. And that's where we'll start. And it'll be a little tug. And then eventually we'll figure out what that value is, and that'll drive volume over time. And the big CPG guys will find their way in there eventually. But the small scale innovators are likely where we'll start that process. They're good at finding parades and getting out in front of them, and they'll mm-hmm. they'll find us, and they're spending time looking at it now, and their interest will only grow as the number of products on the market expands, and market acceptance therefore will justify them jumping in at the scale in which they can.
Of those six major players in the insect protein, are you the only one in Canada?
Yes. So there's us in Canada, there's one in the US, and there's three in Europe, and there's one that's in South Africa, Europe, and North America at varying scales. All of whom, you know, we have to collaborate on certain aspects of, you know, regulatory and otherwise, and then we compete in the market based on our technology and the value and cost of production. So it's interesting being at that early stage of an industry where I know all six CEOs, well, five plus myself, and luckily pre-COVID got to go meet them all, and spend time with them and talk about you know, the challenges of building an industry as cornerstones, so that there's a marketplace for us all to compete in. And how do we define that? And how do we help provide unity in the messaging around the value of the products that we're all producing? Not value as in consumer, but the functional values of those products, so that we don't end up being, you know, crabs in a bucket trying to crawl our way out and earn our spot at the table.
No, that's really exciting that Intera is on the forefront of this. I think Canada's food security and our supply chain and people realizing how much food that is consumed in Canada is not actually produced in Canada. And so to know that we have, you know, some really exciting sustainable protein sources in the pipeline that are homegrown, I think there'll be a lot of people excited to follow your guys' story.
Yeah, it's been a great journey for us as a company, and we're into the engineering on our next facility, and one in the US and then one in Eastern Canada. So there's we've got an extensive capital program to roll out over the next 3 or 4 years, and COVID's making that a little bit harder. But it's also provided the opportunity for us to attract some really good talent, and to take the time that this has given us to do some of that research and get some of that engineering done and put people to work on these projects, so that when the world resumes, we're ready to go and scale at great pace.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to be respectful of your time, Keith. I kind of have one more question slash comment. So on your guys' website on Intera, it says, no arable land is required, leaving more farm acreage to grow more food for people. Likewise, no added water is required, as all the water the insects needs comes from the recycled fruits and vegetables in their diet. Black mm-hmm. soldier fly larvae are highly efficient, low impact sources of nutrients compared to resource-intensive alternatives like beef, pork, chicken, fish meal, soy meal, coconut oil, and palm kernel oil. Excuse me. So I think that, you know, that statement really encompasses, you know, what it is that Intera is doing with your insect operation, and shines a light on how sustainable it really is, and that you're not trying to necessarily erode other types of protein markets. You're simply trying to bring another sustainable source. That's human consumption that has good nutrient profile. I think that's really exciting, and probably a lot of people watching this, you know, didn't even know that there was large scale insect farming going on, yet alone right in our backyard. So,
absolutely, yeah, it feels good to do something like this, because inherently there's just this value to being part of the food supply chain, to feeling like you're dealing with other people's byproducts and finding value in that. And I feel quite fortunate to be able to participate in the egg space in general, especially at a time where the importance of strong food supply chains, integrated supply chains, is at the forefront. So I'm mm-hmm. pretty lucky today.
Well, I know that the one stat I'm going to take from this is the 200 tons of organic matter a day that the insects eat that otherwise would be, going to landfills and the like. That's pretty impressive. Last question. So you're a seasoned entrepreneur. You've started many businesses. You've been a trailblazer in the agricultural technology space. What might you kind of leave or say to other aspiring entrepreneurs, whether they're in the agricultural technology space or the food space, just about we're in a challenging time. You've weathered many yourself and currently are with Intera. You know, what do you say to somebody that's, you know, just trying to hang on and get through COVID?
That's a great question. And I usually have a very flippant answer to that question, which is, you know, never waste a good crisis. But I've just been really choking on that, because I used to use that, just let it fall out of my mouth, because this is just feels so different from that. And so what we're trying to do internally with our business is become anti-fragile. We're trying to turn that into something real, which means when we talk about opportunities, it's about, we've highlighted the fact that our food supply chains are fragile. So that has provided a stronger business driver for us to get out of bed and go to work. We've realized how important our networks and communities are. And so, there's a slide we put up for our team meetings last month, which said, the effects of COVID aren't just fevers and coughs. It's mental health. It's otherwise. And so we're trying to find ways of building resilience within our organization, within our people, finding purpose in a time when it's a bit harder to find purpose, to say, no, we're a part of that food supply chain. We're an essential service, as we've been deemed, and we need to get out of bed every day and build the best business we can and support our staff, support our suppliers, and our partners, and push those products into the market, and focus on the good of that, that comes from that does it. And it feels a little trite to say it, but it does feel good that we are growing and we're hiring, and at a time when economic development and giving people a purpose, at a time when there's large scale unemployment, there's something good about that.
Well said. I think we all need more reasons than normal to get out of bed these days. So, well said, and thank you for taking the time, Keith. Much appreciated.
Anytime, Mike.